71, the high Thursday 74. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 60 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show for this Tuesday, October 21st, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. Chase Brumfield alongside Manny the Controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904, 205-342-9904. We got a good show on tap for you today. A lot to cover, a lot to get to. Got some good guests. I'll run it all down for you here in just a second. First, though, I need to tell you, as always, this hour of the Gary Harris Show, always brought to you by my good friend, Steve Swofford, and the good folks at Alabama Credit Union. Member owned and not-for-profit, it really is just a better way of banking. And I encourage you to find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Or you can get by and see them at one of their 38 locations across the state of Alabama and one in the panhandle of Florida. Alabama Credit Union. Loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership. Then join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, coming up today at 9:30, the Rocket Man, Rudy Armin. 977 ESPN Radio in Huntsville, talking Bama football and basketball, recruiting as well. And then at 10:30, really special guest, Dr. Gary White, goes so far back in his association with Alabama football. How far are you asking? Does he go back? Let me just tell you, his first year as a student manager at the University of Alabama, 1957, Ears Whitworth was the head coach. Ears Whitworth. That's pre-Coach Bryant. But Dr. Gary White then served as a student manager from 1957 to 1961 and then had a career in the athletic department and the football program all the way up until 1996 when he retired. So he started as a student manager under Ears Whitworth. That continued under Paul Bear Bryant. And then he worked under Ray Perkins, Bill Curry, and Gene Stallings. So you're talking about basically a walking, talking encyclopedia of Alabama football over the last, close to 70 years, really. Yeah. Well, 68 years. Wow. So we can't wait for that conversation this morning at 10:30. As I said, your phone calls are welcome, 205-342-9904. That's the number on the Gary Harris Show hotline. Also, we had press conferences yesterday at the University of Alabama. Now, yesterday I planned to play that Saturday night post-game press conference. And, you know, as I said before, we're going to get to our callers, and so we did not have an opportunity to play Kalen DeBoer from Saturday night, but we are going to play some press conference audio this morning from the coordinators and from Kalen DeBoer, if we have an opportunity. If we don't, then we won't. It's just as simple as that. Hey, news and notes, Xavien Brown and Yanze Pierre, great games for Alabama football on the defensive side. They're co-SEC Defensive Players of the Week. Of course, Alabama picking up a commitment yesterday from the outstanding quarterback at Thompson High School in Alabaster, Trent Seaborn, committing to the Crimson Tide for the class of 2027. Number one quarterback in the state of Alabama for that 2027 cycle. So Alabama winning on the field and off. Also last night, it was a dramatic game seven of the ALCS in Toronto. I picked the Mariners, Chase, and I thought they were going to get it done. They were up 3-1 in the bottom of the seventh. But George Springer, who all he does is hit postseason home runs. That's all the guy does. You don't believe me? You check his track record. He hit a three-run blast, and Toronto got past the M's 4-3. So Seattle has still never been to a World Series. And Toronto is going back for the first time since the Joe Carter years. Remember, he walked it off against the Braves. So the Dodgers are sitting there rested and ready. They swept the Brewers. I mean, Blue Jays are a good team, and there's no guarantees in sports. We know that, but I'll be very surprised if the Dodgers don't win their second straight World Series. Just going to be honest with you there. All right. How about Monday Night Football? How about Jahmyr Gibbs and a Bama in the NFL update? Doing his thing and absolutely lighting up the Tampa Bay Bucs last night. And what made this such an interesting game really was the fact that the Lions were without their entire starting secondary due to injuries and due to Brian Branch's suspension. But Jahmyr Gibbs rushed 17 times for 136 yards and two touchdowns. But that was just part of his night. A night after McCaffrey had a similar game for the 49ers, Gibbs also caught, how about this, three balls for 82 yards. So he goes for over 200 yards of total offense, two touchdowns, and was just almost unstoppable. So the Lions get the win over the Bucs, 24-9. Unfortunately for the Bucs, Mike Evans broke his collarbone, the outstanding veteran wide receiver. And so he's going to be out for most of the season, it looks like. Also last night, good ball game out in Seattle as well. The Seahawks held off the Texans 27-19. I have to tell you, I watched a good portion of that game. And that Seattle defense is legit, man. They are really, really good. And Darnold's playing well at quarterback. That's a good team. That's a really good team. And Texas is a pretty good team. But that Seattle defense, man, they are stout. Jaron Reed plugging in there at defensive tackle for a long time in the NFL with Seattle, and his buddy at Alabama, A'shaun Robinson, having a big year with the Panthers. So both those guys have been in the league now about 10 years, which is a long time for defensive linemen, but they're both playing well. So a lot going on. Alabama gets ready to go to South Carolina. Crimson Tide is an 11.5-point favorite. After winning four in a row over ranked teams, now on paper they get an easier game, and those are kind of the games to be nervous about, I'm going to tell you. Those are the games that you got to be ready to play, because here's why I say that, and I said it yesterday. If Alabama has a good week of preparation and is dialed in, they're going to win the football game. They're a better football team than South Carolina, okay? There's no denying that. But if you don't have a good week, you don't dial in, you don't prepare the same way you prepared to go to Georgia or play Vandy or go to Mizzou or play Tennessee, and you have a lackluster week and you're not ready to go, you could go into Columbia Saturday afternoon and get beat. That's why it's so important that you stay dialed in. And I do think, as I said yesterday, this will help them, Chase, in that they are playing a fifth straight game, but they get a bye after this week. So you have the ability to say, hey, man, if you're a coach, just give me one more week. Give me one more week of everything you've got, and then you get a chance to get a little break before that four-game stretch to end the season. It's great the way this schedule worked out. A bye after 3 weeks, now a bye after, or three games, a bye after eight games, and then, of course, the end of the season after four more games after that, unless you go to Atlanta and play in the SEC championship game, which Alabama's in. On track to do that as well. All right, it's 9:14. We're off and running. Hey, Phillip and Robbie Glenn, you guys hold tight. We're going to get to you on the other side. 205-342-9904 is the number on the Gary Harris Show hotline. We're off and running. Drew DeArmond at the bottom of the hour. Dr. Gary White at 10:30. Your phone calls, some coaches' audio from the press conference yesterday, and more. The Gary Harris Show on another really nice Tuesday morning. A little bit overcast. There's a chance we may get some showers this morning, but the fall weather is here, and I'm loving it. We'll be back after this.
Here's what's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Tuesday morning. Water and sewer bills for the city of Tuscaloosa's customers will increase by 9% as of October the 1st. The increase is part of a plan to fund salaries and infrastructure projects, according to Sarah Gilmore, the Executive Communication Director for the city. This year's cost of living adjustment is 3%, resulting in a total 9% increase. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news, sports, and weather. It's free throughout the day. Don Hart, Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three.
For you, contact Courtney White at 205-242-5127. North River Timber, CO at gmail.com. North River Timber Company.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today. The chance of a few scattered showers. The high 74. Tonight, clear and cool with the low at 45. Tomorrow and Thursday, the sky sunny both days. The high tomorrow 71. The high Thursday 74. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 60 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
In to the Gary Harris Show, and it is 9:18, and we're going to get to a couple phone calls. Philip is going to lead us off. Good morning, Philip.
Hey, Gary, how you doing, man?
Doing well, man.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Last year when Quavis got hurt, do you remember which game that was in?
I do not. I know he got banged up, and yeah. I can't recall, Philip.
I think it was LSU, and would you say that we were not the same after that?
I would say that he is a unique player on this team, and that Alabama doesn't seem to have another tied in with the pass-catching skills that he possesses. So, yeah, I would say that what he's able to do in the pass game is unique among this group of tight ends and the group of tight ends last year. So, when he's out, they miss his skill set.
Well, and he's been a key to Alabama's development the last few weeks and to Simpson's development, in my opinion. And I don't think we've got anybody quite like him as far as what he can do. I mean, he can make all the catches, Gary.
He sure can. No, he's a gifted pass receiver, and he's physical enough that he can help you in the run game. He's not their best blocking tight end by any means, but with what he gives you in pass catching, and then his ability to move in as an inline tight end and block as well, he's a good player.
Well, I just wanted to tip my hat to him because, you know, as the year gets long, you forget to mention people specifically, and Tim Keenan too. I mean, without those two guys coming back and Tim doing what he's done after his injury, I mean, those guys are so doggone important, it's not even funny.
I agree with you 100%.
Hey, man, you have a good day, Gary. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you, Philip. Always a pleasure to hear from you. Let's keep it going with the birthday boy. I got a little note here, Chase, that says it's Robbie Glenn's birthday. So I know he'll celebrate with his family, but he also celebrated down here. I saw the pictures on Facebook, Robbie. You don't get out much, but when you get out, you cut up. Well, like y'all had a big time on Saturday and Saturday night.
Oh, we did, Gary. Started out at Innisfree and, you know, seeing Tripp and Snead and Brantley and all the guys, they took care of us. And definitely not as young as I used to be, because I went and played golf Sunday when we got back, and I thought I was literally going to die. It was hard. But, I had a great time, great game, what I remember of it. But had a blast.
That's so good.
Yeah. But, and just great time on it.
It speaks well to your bounce-back ability because, of course, I've just about given up golf completely. But to go out and have tie one on the way you did on Saturday, then have the energy to get up and play golf on Sunday at your advancing years now, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, I was surprised I made it. My wife was too. She goes, "You're really going to make it?" I said, "Yeah, I'll get there." But and then I find out Snoop Dogg's birthday was yesterday, and I thought I was older than him, and he's 2 years younger than me. And I was like, man, now I really feel old.
Well, he looks older than you, I tell you that.
but still, Game 7 last night, anytime you have a Game 7 in any sport, but something about baseball, Game 7s are just awesome. Pitchers are on a short leash, you know, manager making decisions, which I think it came back to bottom last night. They had their power in, and they bring in a guy throwing, you know, 95. He's got a live fastball, sinker, but it just wasn't sinking. And boy, when he hit that out, that ball was floating right there. He hit it so far out. Mm-hmm. What a tremendous moment. But I guarantee the Dodgers were like, man, Now we got a long trip. So they were probably hoping for Seattle to win that, but that's a long trip now.
Yeah, I think they would have preferred to have stayed out on the West Coast, but the Dodgers, yep. I think, are the best team in baseball, and I expect them to win the World Series. But we will see.
Yep, we'll see. I mean, when you got Guerrero and Dinger, Springer doing that, those guys got something going. So Dodgers are going to have to play their game. But, yeah, I agree. They're loaded. And it looks like Ohtani figured out what he was missing at the bat, at the plate. So either way, it's going to be some late games. So I know it won't interfere with Bama baseball because there's no way they're playing those games early in the day. So we'll have some night games, so we'll be good. It'll be a fun weekend.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be nice with baseball, World Series, and the college football every week is just incredible. And I'll be interested, as I said, to see how Alabama responds. I know it's easy to say now, well, look what they just did against Georgia and against Vandy and against Mizzou and against Tennessee, and to look over this opponent. But if you look over this opponent, you could be in trouble in the fourth quarter up there in Columbia on Saturday afternoon. You got to be ready to go.
Yeah, it's happened before, Gary.
Sure has. And it'll happen again. Hopefully not to Alabama, but it happens every week in college football. You see a game where you say there's no way in the world that team should be hanging with that other team, but they do, and many times they upset them. So I'm a really –
Anytime you got Sellers on the other side,
sure,
it's a game.
Playmaker.
So that man can take over a game. So it'll be fun. So Ragged Glory sang him and his sister sang me happy birthday this morning on my voicemail, Chase, while I'm taking care of Stryker.
Chase, wake up in there. Chase, wake up. Play me a little happy birthday music for Robbie real quick. Hit us up with a little – I'd love to find the Beatles version, you know, but either way, get Robbie a little happy birthday music on here.
And
go ahead, Robbie.
Stryker had his injections yesterday, and he's doing great. Of course, he did not go to sleep one bit. He's still awake.
Wow.
He got
goodness.
Those steroid and Botox injections, so he's wide open with all that going through him. But he's doing good.
Well,
he's happy.
He's a trooper. Here we go, Robbie.
He is. All right. Thank you.
Hey, hang on. Hang on. Crank it up, Chase.
I'm going to listen.
That's not the version I had in mind, Robbie, but happy birthday, pal.
Thank you, Garrett.
we'll take it. That's a little too mellow for Robbie right there, but it is Robbie Glenn's birthday, one of our good listeners, and he's talking about getting old. He'll never be as old as me. That's the thing about age. Once you're older than somebody, you're older than somebody forever. You may look younger, you may feel younger, you may tell a fib about it, but there we go. It kind of kicked in there a little bit better. But good to hear from our callers this morning. All right, 9:25 here on the Gary Harris Show, and the World Series is coming up. And, again, I got the Dodgers. I'm going to say I think Toronto will be competitive. I'm going to take L.A. in six. Chase, who are you going with?
L.A.'s just too good. I got them in five.
Yeah, they're just man, I was hoping the Mariners would finally push through and make it to a World Series. But you know what? You got to finish, and you got a 3-1 lead in the bottom of the seventh. You got two on and one out. I wonder if it ever, probably not, but I wonder if it ever crossed their mind to walk George Springer and load the bases. But he didn't, and he knocked it out of the ballpark, and the Blue Jays pen did the rest. All right, let's go ahead and get to a timeout here. Before we do that, I do want to mention to you that the YMCA of Tuscaloosa is ready for you and ready for the Y. Great facility, great people, both the staff and the membership there. It's a pleasure to work out there, and I look forward to going as much to just visit with people as I do to get in there and get a workout in. Located at 2300 13th Street downtown, the YMCA of Tuscaloosa. The Y is ready for you, and you're ready for the Y. We'll be back with the Rocket Man, Rudy Armin. And we'll talk some college football and basketball with Drew next, right here on Tide 100.9 FM at 1230 AM, WTBC, your home for Alabama sports.
Your flagship home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
He'll go on the toss to Jam. He cuts it back. He's got a first down. Saturday as the Crimson Tide head east for SEC action against South Carolina. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Online at Tuscaloosa.
On sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big-screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
Did you miss any episode on Tide 100.9? Don't worry. All of our shows can be found on Spotify and Apple Music and on demand on the Tide 100.9 app.
It's gonna be a long, long time.
9:31, welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. And when you hear the Elton John Rocket Man tune, you know it's time for our Rocket Man. Rudy Arman, 977 ESPN Radio in Huntsville, joins us on Tuesdays to talk some ball here on the Gary Harris Show. What's going on, Drew?
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Doing great, man. Let's start with Bama, Tennessee, 37-20. Certainly kind of a peculiar game. Both teams made mistakes, but I guess Alabama made less mistakes than Tennessee, and the Tide was able to light them up with about 5 minutes to go. I got a little nervous when fans started lighting up there with about 5 minutes to go. And Tennessee did drive it down deep twice, but the Bama defense came up with stops, and Alabama gets to 6-1 overall. More importantly, 4-0 in the SEC.
Yeah, big time 4-0. They've beaten Tennessee 17 out of 19. That's called domination. Tennessee was very lucky and fortunate to win the two games they did. It's Kalen DeBoer's first win over Tennessee, which is significant. It's a good Tennessee team. I think they're the second best team in their own state, though, to the Vanderbilt Commodores, based on what I've seen and with my own eyes against Alabama. But they still have a chance to have a good year. But and Joey Aguilar, much better fit. And the thing that kept going through my mind watching the game on Saturday is how much better the quarterback play was on both sides than the snooze fest we had to watch in Knoxville the year before between Iamaliava and Bill Rowe. Because, again, I just think Bill Rowe is a freakish athlete, but I think we're seeing kind of what Alabama football is going to look like under Kalen DeBoer going forward. And that's very quarterback-centric, but they put a lot on the QB, his ability to check, his ability to throw on time, even sometimes to improvise and throw off platform. I thought that was the difference. Certainly, Ty did have a turnover, which was a little bit of a strange one, a fumble that almost looked like a forward pass. But, you know, Alabama did force I thought the two biggest sequences in the game were Yonze Pierre's coming out party. Yeah, of course, we know, three sacks. And what he forced a safety on an intentional grounding during that first half. And then I thought the pick six at the end of the half for Xavier Brown was huge because, first of all, it thwarted Tennessee from making it a one-score game, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown in the half. And then the biggest thing was his ability to make Deshaun Bishop miss and Xavier to score, because it was a big play to keep Tennessee off the board, but it was an even bigger dagger because Alabama was able to put 7 points on the board at the very end of the half and turn the score feels a lot different when you go from 16-7 to 23-7. And Tennessee's credit, they certainly continued to battle. They came, got a stop at the third quarter and then scored. Bishop had that 44-yard run, and it really looked like it might be, and it really kind of still was, a back-and-forth game the rest of the way. But the third biggest sequence was, you know, Alabama going 99 yards and really putting the game away. Championship teams do that. They find a way to win, and they have championship-defining drives. Alabama had one against Vanderbilt that put the game away with a field goal. this one was a touchdown, certainly, to Rico Scott. But I just thought every time Alabama had to respond with a play, they did. And then, as you said, Gary, they got a couple of stops defensively to keep Tennessee out of the end zone late to win the game 37-20 instead of essentially 37-27, and then you're having to defend an onside kick. But overall, I thought it was a really good win for Alabama. I thought it showed the maturity of this team this year. I think they've got a lot. They've got really good leadership in the right places, and we're going to see if that can continue on Saturday in Columbia, as they have a Gamecock team. But don't forget, the South Carolina team was considered a college football playoff contender and a top 15 team at the start of the season. Now they haven't played up to that. I'm not surprised, because they lost so much talent from a year ago. But when you have a guy like Lenore Sellers, who has first-round ability, that you always have a puncher's chance. And Alabama's definitely got to contain him coming up on Saturday at 2:30.
There's no doubt about it that game is you know, we'll get into it more in a moment, but that one is one that you have to get ready to play, just like you do these last four. But sticking with the offense in the Tennessee game, because you're right about Ty Simpson. He's playing at a very high level, maybe as well as any quarterback in the country. And Alabama, with Ryan Grubb, they've done enough in the running game. It's not like they don't try to run the ball, but, boy, they were really struggling to move the ball on the ground. And then Daniel Hill came in, you know, Jam coming off the concussion protocol. You know, he played okay. And you know, Kevin Riley's a similar type back. But they got Hill in there, and you saw what he can bring. 240, 45 pounds, downhill runner, gets those shoulders squared. He can run over you. He's very athletic, catches the ball well out of the backfield. It felt like, Drew, that Daniel Hill gave Alabama something that they haven't had in the running game, and that maybe he earned more playing time going forward.
Well, I mean, he's had a quad injury. We heard Ty Simpson go on record with that after the game, so it kind of limited him somewhat early in the season. But he certainly gave Alabama a spark as a runner and receiver. He did it last week, you know, in Columbia, Missouri, as he helped Alabama put that game away with his first touchdown in an Alabama uniform on that catch. But he had the 3 or 4 yard run for a touchdown to really salt it away on the toss play, you know, during the fourth quarter. And then I will say this, the stat to me of the game was Alabama going into that 99-yard drive, Gary. I think I looked at the stats, and I mentioned Deshaun Bishop, and he had well over 100 yards, had a hell of a game, did a great job. But Tennessee was averaging, I think, over 5 yards per carry. Alabama headed into that drive was averaging 1.5. But the staff's credit, they inserted Daniel Hill, and they also used Jeremy Bernard as a runner. And I credit Alabama's coaching staff for, look, you know, sometimes the conventional way doesn't work. And what I mean by that was Dan Miller coming off the concussion at the end of the Missouri game. He didn't practice a lot. They tried to give Jam some touches, but to the credit of Tennessee, they were keying on him and they contained him. Kevin Riley wasn't that effective, so you go to that third option, and then as soon as you did, you found something with Daniel Hill. You continued to feed him, but then you also decided to use Jeremy Bernard. And I'll tell you who Jerm is, Gary. I know you watch a ton of NFL and you follow it very closely. And it's ironic for fixing to play, and I'm talking about Alabama's fixing to play his alma mater when he played for Will Muschamp on Saturday in Columbia, South Carolina. But Jeremy Bernard is Deebo Samuel. I mean, completely. I mean, he's Alabama's version of Deebo. I've always loved Deebo's game because he's very versatile. He can be a good running back for you. He can be an outstanding wide receiver. He can return kick. And Jerm can do all that. And Jerm had nearly 100 all-purpose yards. You saw what Daniel Hill did in the fourth quarter. And I just credit Alabama's coaching staff because, for me, this team is never going to be a dominant running team. But if they hit that threshold of 120 yards to 150 in between that, I think they can be effective. And it's ironic, when you went back and looked at the final stat sheet of Alabama, 37 and Tennessee 20, Alabama went from averaging 1.5 a carry in the middle of it, you know, that toward that in that toward the end of that third quarter. But by the end of the game, they had 120 yards rushing and averaged 3.8 yards per rush. So that shows what adjusting your play calling, using Jeremy Bernard, and what an impact Daniel Hill had. And I just credit the University of Alabama's coaching staff for taking advantage and using their personnel in a way to hurt Tennessee and to generate some sort of running game to create balance with Ty Simpson and those receivers.
Judy Armin with us talking Bama football. Defensively, Drew, Alabama did a lot of good things, and you know, and they are forcing, they're making plays, and you know, doing so much positive. But yet, I sense, and you may disagree with me, so I'm going to ask you. I sense that first halves, close games, they're really aggressive. You see a lot of four man front. You see them, you know, pushing the issue, blitzing some. Trying to generate some chaos, and then it feels like to me, now you may not see it the same way, I haven't asked you this, but you get a lead, you get a 10-point lead, you get a 13-point lead, a 17-point lead, and I just sense they go, you know, they go to three-man pressure, playing coverage, giving a lot of ground, and it just seems like they allow the other team, and I know they were up 17, but, you know, Tennessee got the ball twice and went right down the field. We saw Missouri do it. I think that's an area where they could tighten up, and I wonder if you do agree with me, if it's more philosophy in the way that they're playing defense in those situations, or players just not playing as well as they're doing throughout the rest of the game, because it seems like Alabama's a lot better and a lot more effective defensively when the game's on the line than when they get a little bit of a cushion.
Well, I think the reason you saw Tennessee make plays is because Tennessee has a better wide receiver core than Vanderbilt. They have a good offensive line. And I think, you know, and Vanderbilt's a more physical team. I think they have the better running game, even though Bishop certainly had a nice second half for Tennessee. But I just think overall, I think Tennessee's ability to throw and catch – and Diego Pavia, while he's improved as a passer, his strength is as a runner, being a dual threat. Aguilar is not a dual threat. Aguilar is a drop-back passer. And I think Tennessee also, where they got themselves in a bind, is they had to abandon the running game somewhat. They had to go ahead and start throwing the ball every down. And again, you know, that's tough to stop because, you know, I really like Staley, the freshman wide receiver for Tennessee. I think he's a future star. And he didn't get a lot of pub in the offseason. Brazel's really improved in his second year coming over from Tulane. And then, of course, Matthews. But Tennessee did have some drops. But I will give you one thing, too, after watching him play again, and he hurt Alabama last year, is you can argue. And look, I understand the start Justice Haynes has gotten off to at Michigan. He's certainly a really good player. But after Caleb Downs, who is an outstanding safety and is going to be a top 10 draft pick, already won a national championship at Ohio State. They're the number one team in the country. Had a great year at Alabama, helping them win the SEC and make the playoff. But who would have thunk one of the top 2 to 3 players that Alabama would lose in the transfer portal would be Miles Kitzelman. But he's turned into a pro. I think he's going to be drafted probably on the third day. He got a key fourth down conversion as a fullback for Tennessee. He caught 3 passes. They converted a big fourth down going to him. And as you saw, he was the target on that pick 6. But, you know, Xavier Brown jumped the route. So he's become a permanent team captain. He's a really good player. And that just goes to show you that Alabama, they lost some talented football players, but certainly – Miles Kitzelman's one of them. But I just think overall it was more a style of offense. Tennessee is much better at throwing and catching this year than they were before. Certainly you'd like to see Alabama, you know, close it out and be able to, you know, maybe force another turnover or two. But I give credit more to Joey Aguilar, the year he's had for Tennessee and their wide receivers. Certainly Alabama had to bend but don't break. And I think that's also – schematically kind of what Cade Womack wants to do. They're going to give up plays, but the key for this team is red zone defense, and I thought it was lights out again on Saturday.
All right, let's see. You already mentioned South Carolina, but you're right. I mean, this is a game where I think if Alabama prepares well and has the same mindset that they've had this four-game stretch against Georgia, Vandy, Mizzou, and Tennessee, they're going to go in there and win. They're a better football team. But we don't know how they'll prepare. We hope they prepare that way. But if you're not ready to go and you don't have a good week of preparation, as you mentioned, with Lenora Sellers on the other side, other sideline, a team that was thought to be very capable going into the year, you could be in some trouble. And one thing I like, Drew, is that they've been through a tough stretch. But you, as a coach, you can ask them, you can ask the players, give us one more game. And then you get the bye. So it sets up well from a schedule standpoint that it's just like get through one more game and then you get a break, right?
Well, yeah, no doubt. I mean, this is a gauntlet they've run. They've set SEC history with four straight, wins over ranked teams. There's no doubt about that. And then this South Carolina team was ranked at the beginning of the season. So this has kind of been a murderer's row. But I think this is a get-right game from the standpoint of get your mind right. You've got to continue to handle success. You know, they've been able to answer a lot of questions because a lot of people didn't think they'd beat Georgia going on the road. They'd won 33 in a row, and they had struggled on the road under Kalen DeBoer. So the mindset and the thought was that they probably won't be able to handle Georgia. Well, they did. Well, can they handle the success of winning a big game like that? Can they return home? Can they get revenge over what's a really tough, stylistically, a team to play in Vanderbilt? Well, they answered that question and protected their house. Then you go on the road to Missouri. Some thought that was a trap game because of the emotion that you have to, pardon me, the energy you have to play with to beat Georgia and Vandy. But Alabama answered the bell. They were able to control the tempo of the game and possess the football and then make enough plays to beat a really good Missouri team on the road. And then Tennessee, we know they were one of the teams that got Alabama a year ago. I think the players that are in the program, some of them, a lot of them, have been in it, multiple years, even before Kalen DeBoer got there. So they understand the rivalry and what it means to the fans and to beat those guys. And I think Kalen DeBoer and his staff, Ryan Grubb, kind of referenced it yesterday. They're starting to understand, what that game means. And so they were able to take care of Tennessee and beat a good team. Now, it's one of the last questions to be asked, because we all know what Kalen DeBoer's record is against ranked teams. Well, he's struggled against teams like this. This kind of has an Oklahoma-type feeling to it, where Alabama was a huge favorite, double figures against OU last year in Norman, and we know they didn't play well. So now you're trying to answer the bell against South Carolina, and certainly they should have your attention, though, because Alabama was lucky to survive against that Carolina team a year ago in Tuscaloosa. They made a nice comeback, But I will say South Carolina doesn't have the same football team either. They lost a lot of those guys on the offensive and defensive lines and in the backfield with Rocket Sanders to the NFL. So we'll see what happens. But it's certainly a big challenge for Alabama and one that they need to pass and get to this bye and have 2 weeks to prepare for LSU.
Let's get to some recruiting. First, we'll start with the flip on Sunday of Corey Howard, the edge rusher out of Valdosta High School in Georgia, been committed to the Bulldogs since the summer, flips to Alabama. He's got that classic edge build, 6'6", over 250 pounds. What led to this flip, and what type of player is Corey Howard?
Well, I mean, I just think Alabama, Georgia's got a very heavy defensive line class. He was the seventh commitment there. They had seven that they had already taken. But Corey Howard wants to play a little earlier, and if you've watched Alabama's edges, and if he's probably going to end up with his hand in the dirt and be a bandit, but he could be a wolf. We've already seen Yonsei Pierre, he's the reigning SEC defensive player of the week, and he started out the year, Gary, as a third team guy and a situational rusher in a lot of ways. But we know the injuries to Quay Rousseau and certainly to John Marion Latham opened the door for him, and then you see the success LT Overton's had. He's come over from Texas A&M. He had a huge game, the week before in Columbia, Missouri. So it's just he fits in either one of those spots, both certainly the wolf and, certainly the bandit. He is 6'6", about 250 pounds, really good length, really good stuff coming off the edge, really has a lot of tools. And I think he may have to wait his turn still because – Quay should be back next year. He should be returning from injury. We'll see what happens with John Marion Latham, certainly with Yonze coming into his own. But I do think he has a bright future, and I think he's a good fit from a skill standpoint with Kane Womack's defense.
And then yesterday, the commitment from Trent Seaborn, the junior quarterback out of Thompson High School in Alabaster. He took over as a starter his eighth grade season, won a state championship. He's been to three straight 7A state championship games. He's won two of them. Even though Thompson has lost to Clay Chalkville and lost to Hoover and lost to a high school team in Georgia, they're still probably the favorites to make the 7A state championship game again. This is a young man, so he's been playing quarterback at a high level for a long time. Strong, strong connections to the Tagovailoa family. And, you know, went ahead and announced yesterday for Alabama, Drew.
Well, I mean, if anybody knows Seaborn's backstory and how his family is so tightly connected to the Tagovailoas, and they moved from Colorado when he was in middle school to be a part of this Thompson program that Talia Tagovailoa was a part of, and he developed into a really good player and went to the University of Alabama, then transferred and played so well for Mike Locksley and became the all-time leading passer in Maryland history. And we know what Tua did at the University of Alabama as a player and the impact he had. So I think Seaborn, when they did this, of course, the original plan was to play for Nick Saban. I'm sure that they were hoping that he and pray he wasn't going to retire. And certainly, Coach Saban would have definitely taken Seaborn, and I think they wanted to follow in the path of the Tagovailoas. But, you know, things didn't completely go to script as Coach Saban retired. But in some ways, it's an even better opportunity because you're playing for a QB guru and Nick Sherman, who does a good job with the quarterbacks, and Ryan Grubb, a guy that can get quarterbacks in the Heisman conversation and can have them drafted in the first round like they did with Michael Penix, and like he's got Ty Simpson on that path. So I think, you know, Seaborn's the ultimate winner. You don't see many eighth graders be able to come in and play on that 7A level for Thompson and win a state championship, and he certainly did that. And he's won multiple state titles. He's just a winner. He's also grown quite a bit. I think he's in the 6'2 range, maybe getting closer to 6'3, and certainly has some physical ability, and he's played against high-level competition for Mark Freeman. So I think it's a low-risk, high-reward situation. And then we know about Elijah Haven, the number one quarterback in the country out of Baton Rouge. He's supposedly a strong lead to Alabama. We'll see. And the one thing about this coaching staff you got to like, they're going to sign two QBs in this coming class. And, of course, in Kaua out of Hawaii, you know, via Utah. He's now playing prep school ball in Utah. But then they're also, you know, going to sign, and he was on his jet to Mall on his official visit this weekend. They're going to sign good quarterbacks and let them compete and let the cream rise to the top. And certainly with the development of Jalen Milroe getting drafted in the third round, and then, of course, what you've seen out of Ty Simpson thus far, I mean, it's spectacular. He could win. He's going to be a Heisman favorite and a guy that could go extremely high in the draft. The future is extremely bright at the quarterback position for Alabama.
Yeah, no doubt. And if they were to add Elijah Haven, the number one quarterback in the 2027 class from Louisiana, it would make it even stronger. I want to leave this last minute or so for basketball. What did you think of the Tide's performance last week in the exhibition game at Bout Auditorium, 109-105 over Florida State?
Well, he got a long way to go defensively, especially in transition and team defense, but got a lot of new pieces. LeBaron Filon looked like a future lottery pick, worked a lot on his outside shot, you know, went 9 of 10 from the free throw line, scored 28, and, you know, really just looked like a pro out there. He's going to be, I think, one of the leaders of this team. When they get Latrell Risel back, I think they'll be even better at that guard spot. He's going to do outstanding things. We didn't see Noah Williamson either. He's been kind of hurt. He'll give him more depth inside, even though he's not as athletic. But I love Taylor Bull Bowen. I think he's a great fit with his athleticism and skill set at the stretch four spot. You know, and I really think Houston Millett's going to be a great fit and be healthy this year. And he did a nice job helping him close out the game. And then, you know, I really like Davion Hanna, the freshman. I think he's got a lot of defensive upside, and if his shot can come along, I think he's a guy that can finish in transition and be really good. We didn't see a lot from London Jimison and Amari Allen. I think they're very talented. And then Keaton Bristow. Love his game. Love his energy. I think he's got to take on that role of Mo Diabate, who's going off to Kentucky and going to be a big-time factor for them intangibly. But I think Bristow can kind of bring some of those same qualities to the table, no doubt about it. But I think this Alabama team's got a lot of upside, and I think if they can improve defensively, I still think they can be a top-four team in the SEC.
Great stuff, Drew. And real quickly, I mean, like, I'm up against it, but the Ratliff twins, you favoring USC over Alabama here? What's the word?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I think they're going to go play for Eric Musselman and never reach the Final Four.
Thank you, Drew.
Appreciate it, Gary.
All right, you find Drew on Twitter at DrewD977ESPN, of course, on 97.7 ESPN Radio in Huntsville. All right, we'll come back and wrap.
Feel the fun. Win big. Let's roll into Pearl River Resort.
Must be 21 or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big-screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Sky partially sunny today. The chance of a few scattered showers, the high 74. Tonight, clear and cool with the low at 45. Tomorrow and Thursday, the sky sunny both days. The high tomorrow 71, the high Thursday 74. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 63 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show.
Goal line in, touchdown, Alabama.
New home for Alabama sports.
Tide 100.9.
And streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 9:58. Let's go wrap it up for hour number one of The Gary Harris Show. It's been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Also, a reminder, we'll be back at Innisfree Irish Pub. Fridays at the free home and away games. I'll be there Friday morning from 9 to 11. Also, we'll have our Bama football trivia contest presented by T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall, home of the $99 suit sale. All right, tower number two is on the way. We'll take some more phone calls. We are going to get to Ryan Grubb audio. I thought he had a really interesting comment on the atmosphere Saturday night in Bryant-Denny Stadium, Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium for the Tennessee game, and also 10:30, I should say, Dr. Gary White, walking encyclopedia of the history of Alabama football. All that's coming up in the second hour of the program.
Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Steve DeSager.
The Toronto Blue Jays will host Game 1 of the World Series against the Dodgers on Friday night on Fox TV. The Blue Jays won Game 7 at home to take the American League Championship, eliminating Seattle 4-3. George Springer with a three-run homer in the seventh. The loss to reliever Eduard Bazzardo, who allowed the home run to the first batter he faced. The save to Jeff Hoffman, who got three straight strikeouts in the ninth. The series MVP was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There were two NFL games Monday night. Seattle took the late contest over Houston 27-19. The Seahawks, despite four turnovers, get the win. They're 5-2. Detroit beat Tampa Bay 24-9. Each team 5-2. Jahmyr Gibbs of the Lions with 17 carries, 136 yards rushing, and two scores.
Treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
Tide 100.9. Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky sky, partially sunny today. The chance of a few scattered showers, the high 74. Tonight, clear and cool with the low at 45. Tomorrow and Thursday, the sky sunny both days. The high tomorrow 71, the high Thursday 74. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 63 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV, Crimson Tide Kickoff, play-by-play for Alabama sports, and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show for this Tuesday, October 21st, 2025. Gary Harris, Chase Brumfield. The Gary Harris Show hotline, 205-342-9904. Dr. Gary White coming up at 10:30, talking history of Alabama football. Also, we'll get to some coaches' audio from yesterday. I'm going to play some of that Ryan Grubb for you. I promise. I'm not going to find a way not to get it on. I thought he had an interesting press conference yesterday. Chance for some showers this morning. It's overcast here in Tuscaloosa, but if it does rain, it's not going to rain a lot. Raining pretty hard over Mississippi and north of here, northwest of here, Pickens County, Lamar County, those areas getting some rain. Right now, let's jump out on the Gary Harris Show hotline and start off this second hour with our pal Tom. Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hey, Gary, how are you
doing? Doing well.
You know, I was looking at the poll when they came out on Sunday, and I started thinking about, irregardless who it is in the top 12 or whatever, can you tell me, and I guess I could look it up, I hadn't done it, what the format will be for the playoffs this year with 12?
Well, it'll be the same as it was last year. Tom?
I can't remember.
I can't remember. Okay, I mean, I have to pull it up. You'll have four teams get byes, and so you'll have four first-round games. So there'll be eight teams that play. And then you'll have, after that, you have eight teams left, and you play it down to four, and then to two, and then you have a champion.
I guess my main question is, how does the home feel? I mean, is it on-campus games this year, too?
Yeah, on campus games. It starts out on campus, and so you know if you have to play those first games, obviously you'd be better off playing at home than on the road.
I got you. So the teams that get byes are the teams that will have the first home games, right?
No, the teams that have the first home games will be the first four teams that have the higher seedings when they play those first round games. You have eight teams that play. Those teams play campus games.
Okay.
So in other words, you have four teams that have a bye. Okay. They're sitting at home. Those first four games, the higher rated team will host the lower. In other words, the 5 team will host the 12 team. The 8 team will host the 9 team.
Right.
The 6 team will host the 11 team. And then after that, the winners advance to play the top 4 seeds. And I can't remember, Chase, to you, I think those are home games as well, right? And then after that, once you get to the playoff semifinals and then the championship, you're at neutral sites. And of course, the championship game is going to be, I think, this year down in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium.
Let me ask you this. The neutral site, when that get to that point in the playoff, there's only four teams left, right?
Let me go through this again, because now I'm getting confused. The first four games are on campus sites. Then I think the playoff quarterfinals are actually bowl games, aren't they, Chase? Aren't they bowl games? Aren't they tied in through bowl games? I think they're tied in through bowl games. And if somebody else there is out there is listening, they can help me out with it. And then you have your semifinals, and then your championship game, I know, is going to be down at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. So
I got you.
You
answered my question.
Yeah, I think the only campus games are that first round games. After that, you go to bowl games, then you go to the semifinals, then you go to the championship game. Because remember, they wanted to work the bowl games into this, so there'd be more interest in so those traditional highly ranked bowls will host the quarterfinals. So there's first round, quarterfinals, semifinals, and national championship game.
Right. Okay. Well, you answered my question. That was, you know, there will be some home games. For instance, let's just say that the committee comes up with the 12 that's in the polls like they are right now. That would mean that that Alabama would get a home game because they're in the top four, right?
No. No, that's not what it means, Tom. What it means is the top four teams get seeds. They don't play that first week. The first week games are on campus. After that, it's bowl games, then the semifinals, then the national championship game. So if you get if you get a top four seed, you won't play it up at somebody else's campus or your own.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. If there was a reward for being in that top four. Was there a reward?
Yeah, the reward is you don't play. That's the reward.
Right.
Yeah. The other eight teams but have to play.
You don't get double reward by.
I think after, and if I'm wrong, somebody out there listening can correct me, but I think you play campus games the first round, bowl games the quarterfinals, semifinals, and then the national championship game.
Thanks, Gary.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. 10-11 here on the Gary Harris Show. Now, I'm trying to, because here I am trying to answer this with Tom, and I appreciate the question, and he hit me up with it, and I'm trying to have a hard time remembering how it was done last year, but I think that's right. Chase, if you get a chance, check that for me. But I think it's home games, the first eight teams, the top four teams get a bye, okay? They don't play. 5 through 12 play with the higher-seeded team hosting the lower-seeded team. Like I said, 5 would host 12. 7 would host 10, 6 would host 11, and 8 would host 9. Then those winners advance to play the top four seeds in a bowl game. And then the winners of that play the national semifinals. And then the winners of the semifinals obviously play in the national championship game. That's the way I believe it works. So... yeah, I'm pretty confident that's it. If I remember correctly, that's it. Home games, campus games, bowl games, semifinals, national championship game. So there you have it, as far as I understand it. All right, it's 10-12 here on the Gary Harris Show. I do want to get to the break so that I can come back and get to this Ryan Grubb audio. Also, phone lines are open on the Gary Harris Show hotline. During the break, I'm going to check this. I'm going to check and see if my memory is correct. But 205-342-9904 is the number. Hey, lunch is right around the corner, and I would love for you to check out my friend Cliff and the good folks there at Decades Pub and Grub downtown at Timberson Square. Man, they got some of the best sandwiches you have ever, ever tasted. The food there is hand-prepared daily. Great atmosphere, outdoor seating, plus two different bars. One side's got the music videos. The other side's got the sports bar right there all at one. Decades Pub and Grub downtown at Timberson Square. All right, we're going to come back with Ryan Grubb, Alabama offensive coordinator, next year on the Gary Harris Show.
Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the headlines from Tuscaloosa Thread, brought to you by Tuscaloosa Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. A low-pressure system in the Central Caribbean is expected to become Tropical Storm Melissa later today. Some computer models show the storm moving further west before turning north into the Gulf. It is day 21 of the federal government shutdown, and West Alabama Democrat Congresswoman Terry Sewell scolded Republicans in the Senate in a Facebook post.
Simply unacceptable. It's as if they don't care.
The longest shutdown in history was 35 days in 2018, and water and sewer bills for Tuscaloosa City customers increased by 9% on October 1st. Fall is here, so let Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram put you in a Ram truck, a Dodge Charger, or a Jeep. Shop the dealership where former Bama quarterback Jalen Hurts shops. Tuscaloosa CDJR online at Tuscaloosa CDJR.
And savings today at the Home Depot.
Only when using Stone Baked Pizza Mode. Offer valid October 2nd through October 22nd. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages.
Free Irish Pub, often imitated but never duplicated. Fridays at the Free with me, Gary Harris, this fall at Innisfree Irish Pub, 1925 University Boulevard. In Tuscaloosa.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case, and this I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
Want to jump into any of the shows? Call Tide 100.9 right now at 205-342-9904.
Will somebody answer that damn phone?
That's 205-342-9904.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. I have pulled up the bracket, Chase, because I want to make sure I am 100% clear on this and don't confuse anybody, because Tom, the sheriff, got me confused. Sometimes I think he does that on purpose. All right, here is the actual bracket, okay? And I was right. The first round games are on campus between the 5 through 12 seeds, with the higher seed hosting the lower seed. There'll be one game on Friday, December 19th, and then there'll be three games on Saturday, December 20th. All right, the winners of those four games then play the other four top seeds in the bowl games. December 31st, the Goodyear Cotton Bowl. Thursday, January 1st, the Capital One Orange Bowl. Thursday, January 1st, the Rose Bowl. And Thursday, January 1st, the Allstate Sugar Bowl. Then the winners of those games play in the national semifinals, which will be hosted on Thursday, January 8th. In the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, and Friday, January 9th in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And then the national championship game is in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium, Monday, January 19th, 2026. So there you have it. Give me an applause. So, all right, Tom, I hope that clears it up for you. Also, tonight, the NBA gets underway with two games and then a full slate of games tomorrow night. But two games tonight for TV purposes. And they're big ones. Houston at OKC. Of course, Houston has Kevin Durant now, going in his 19th season. And OKC, they won the championship last year. They're probably should be the favorites to win it again this year with that young roster. And then the Golden State Warriors at the Los Angeles Lakers. All right, so NBA action tonight. All right, Ryan Grubb, Alabama offensive coordinator, who's done a fabulous job, met with the media on Monday morning here in Tuscaloosa, and he had his press conference, and he had an interesting, we're going to play it for you now, Ryan Grubb, but listen to his opening comments. He doesn't make an opening statement very often, if at all, but he did yesterday because he wanted to make a point about how special Saturday night was.
I was going to start with one thing. I just wanted to say, I never do this. I'm going to channel my inner Kane Womack here, but I just want to thank the fans. I've coached the NFL. Top five games, national championship, and that was the most electric atmosphere I've ever seen. So, Roll Tide.
All right, with that.
Okay, ready?
Start with Nick, front right.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask about Ryan Williams. Getting him to have a chance to, I don't think he had a single drop. He made some tough catches. What do you think about his play and how he responded?
Not surprised. He's been working really hard, been saying that for a couple weeks, that, you know, it just felt like the process was going to pay off for him, and he's stuck to his guns on the things he'd been trying to work on, and obviously made some really, really tough catches in the game. And not just that, but his releases against man coverage, holding the line on the edge of the sideline, just he did a lot of things really well.
Go to Chase on the far left.
Want to ask you about Daniel Hill. It looks like the last two games he's been big for y'all late in the fourth quarter. Do you see his role expanding at all with the way he's playing?
I do. We're a production-based business, and Daniel certainly did that at the end of the game. I thought he brought a spark to the run game, some broken tackles, good vision and patience in the screen game. And, you know, Daniel's a talented kid. We've kind of been waiting for him to get healthy and show out some of the things that he did this spring for us. So was excited to see him, you know, step up in that spot.
Let's go to Colin on that.
Hey, Ryan. When going into each week, what's the conversation look like between you and Coach DeBoer about, you know, those first 12, 15 plays, those script plays, and what role does, I guess, Ty come into that? Like, what kind of, does he have input? Like, what does that conversation look like going into each week?
I don't talk to Kalen about the opening script or anything like that. As far as Ty, you know, the way I look at it is, I tell our guys the same thing every week. When I go to make the openers and the plays that are going to be called in the game, I take a full cut up on Thursday afternoon of every play we ran in practice, and then I go through all of them. When I watch the plays, it's kind of tell the truth Thursday, where you're looking at it like, okay, what did we actually execute well? I know the plays that I like and that I want to favor, but when it came down to it, what were we executing? And then from there, I get a list from Ty every week of some of the things that are, I give him a section for each part of the call sheet. What are his favorite throws? What are his favorite plays? And I certainly take that into consideration. You know, what are the plays that he feels the most comfortable getting to? And then just kind of add it all up and put them in order and let it rip.
Go to the back on the right, Mike.
You had a couple changes along the offensive line to start. Just what did you see out of Jaden and Carroll to start the game?
Yeah, J-Rob has been getting healthier every week. And, you know, I thought he played really good in the first quarter and part of the second quarter, and was just great to see him out there. And then Michael, you know, he's been battling with Wilkin. I thought Wilkin really stepped up, and I thought Wilk played really well. I thought there were some things that he hadn't done yet this year that showed out really well. And still grooming Michael as a young player, and I thought he did some good things as well.
Jump over to Katie on the left side.
Sticking with the O-line, what did you see from them and Ty in this decision-making and there not being a sack this week?
Yeah, I thought there was probably six or seven plays in a row where the pocket was just so clean. And I thought the guys did a great job settling in as the game went, when we needed to have some clutch throws. You know, early on, I actually thought there was some traffic in the backfield. I thought we did a good job getting those things cleaned up on the sideline. And, you know, for Ty, there was two throws for sure that were clean throwaways that I thought he didn't do the week before. And I knew that was something going into the week that Ty was going to be really focused on. We had talked about a lot, and it saved us some negative yardage hits for sure.
All right, anything else for Coach Grom? All right, thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
All right, that is Ryan Grubb with some short but sweet comments yesterday, including the shout out to the fans. So I thought that was pretty cool. He didn't talk long, did he?
Very short.
Wow. I expect a little bit longer than that. I was actually doing a few Tai Chi exercises. I should have ran Kane Womack, because his opening comments longer than Ryan Grubb's entire press conference. All right. Now we're running a little bit early. I should have just told you to roll into Kane Womack. But this will give us more time with Dr. Gary White. That's what we'll do. So trying to get to a certain time here before I throw it to the break, if you wonder what I'm doing. Okay. Stalling. You mean, I'm almost out of breath. I was doing some Tai Chi exercises, man. And then the next thing I know, Chase is like, I could hear because I had my headphones on, but I didn't realize he was that close to the end. All right. If they ever put video in here, I'm going to be cooked, aren't I? All the different things that I'm doing. All right, let's get to our break, and we're going to come back with a longtime Alabama football program employee Dr. Gary White is going to talk about the history of Alabama football from his unique perspective, which started when Ears Whitworth was still the head coach at Alabama pre-Coach Bryant. We'll do that next right here on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTVC, your home for Alabama sports.
Affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. HIMS.com/RADIO.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case. In this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise with Us on our website.
Your flagship home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
He'll go on the toss to Jam. He cuts it back. He's got a first down.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide head east for SEC action against South Carolina. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Online at TuscaloosaCDJR.com. And by DCH Regional Medical Center. Online at DCHSystem.com.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Show here on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, and it's my pleasure to be joined now by Dr. Gary White, who has a long and illustrious career in the Alabama football program in the athletic department at the University of Alabama, going all the way back to his time as a student manager, first under J.B. Ears Whitworth. And we're going to talk about Coach Whitworth, because not a lot gets said about him. And then, of course, under Paul Bryant, and then Dr. White scouted for the Cowboys for a couple years and then came back to Tuscaloosa and worked under Coach Bryant, Coach Perkins, Coach Curry, and Coach Stallings at the University of Alabama. Good morning, Dr. White. How are you?
Fine, Gary. Thank you for having me on this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to have you. In fact, I want to start where it started for you in 1957 at the University of Alabama as a student manager in the football program, and that was Coach Whitworth's last years. And I've always been interested about him, because even when I, you know, took this job at the TV station and got to visit with Coach Griska a lot and Coach Hennessy and Coach Rutledge and all the great links to Coach Bryant, there weren't many links to Coach Whitworth, who, like Coach Bryant, was from Arkansas. Like Coach Bryant, was a really good player at Alabama. Like Coach Bryant, was a successful assistant coach in college football at big-time programs, and also did a nice job as the head coach at Oklahoma A&M. Not great, but okay. And that led him to the job at Alabama, where it just did not go well. 0-10 in 1955, 2-7-1 in 1956, and 2-7-1 in your season there, 1957. But give us a little insight into Coach Whitworth. I know he'd been, as I said, a successful assistant coach, really good offensive line coach, and took over Alabama. Alabama had had so much success, but it was not a great situation that he took over and then never really could get it going. What was it like, your experience with Coach Whitworth?
Well, it seemed like, Gary, when I look back on it, comparing, you know, what took place when Coach Bryant came here, their staff did not have the organizational skills
that Coach Bryan implemented when he came here. For instance, we played Georgia Tech that season, and on Wednesday they had a scrimmage, and it was the first team against the second team, and this is on Wednesday now before the Saturday game, and they practiced scrimmage something like 2 or 3 hours just going at it, and the rest of the players that were not involved in the scrimmage would just be laying over on the sideline with their head on the helmet watching the scrimmage and that kind of thing. So it just didn't seem like the organizational skills were there that were present under Coach Bryant. And then too, you had he was the head coach, and then Coach Hank Chris, I guess Coach Hank hired him, I suppose, but he had coached him and Coach Bryant and that group of people. And so Coach Hank was the athletic director and the line coach.
Interesting.
So you imagine, you know, what that was like, him being on the field as an athletic director and then Coach Whitworth being the head coach. I don't know how that went in staff meetings or, you know, what took place there, but that was the kind of situation it was. And Coach Whitworth was really a jam-up guy. I know the last game that we played against Auburn and got beat 40-0. Well, we were all in the dressing room, of course, downtrodden because of the loss and everything. And Coach Whitworth was sitting on the locker, and the guys were coming up, you know, patting him on the back and all of that. And tears were running down his cheek, you know, that he was sitting there so distraught by, I guess, all the circumstances that had happened that 3 years. But, you know, the one thing that they did, he talked about us going over Georgia this year and beating them and them undefeated. That 57 team beat Georgia in Athens 14-13. So it was seemed like we've had their number for quite a while.
Yeah, even Coach Whitworth was able to beat them. I want to ask you one more question about him. They're going to move on to Coach Bryan, obviously, because as you said, very affable, very likable, good football coach, just didn't, you know, seem to have the qualities that needed to be a head coach. Do you know, because I don't, you know, again, I'm interested, he passed away very young. I think he was maybe 52 years old or something like that. Do you know, did he have cancer? Do you know what he passed away from?
I don't know. I know that Coach Bryant sent condolences and all that. Seemed like it was during the season when Coach Bryant couldn't go to his funeral, but I don't recall exactly what it was. I don't know.
Yeah, he was living. He was back living in Athens. I guess he was an assistant coach there at Georgia.
That's right. He was assistant coach when he passed away.
Yeah.
Over there.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't. But that's very, very young. I think
don't
he was.
Know, but we had some really good players on that 57 team, but I don't know. They just didn't develop them. I don't know exactly what it was, but it just didn't click. I think it would have been great, you know, for Coach Whitworth if it had. He was, he was really a nice guy. It just maybe he was too nice. I don't know.
Well, maybe so. And after the 57 season, the decision was made to let him go. And then, of course, Coach Bryant came in 58. Yeah, I guess it was an entirely different way of coaching football, Dr. White.
Well, it was totally different. He came in December to get things organized and brought 2 or 3 coaches with him to begin recruiting and getting things set in place for that. I think he had to go coach the A&M in the bowl game. And then he came back in January and he went over each and every detail of that department and made a lot of changes. I know with us managers that there was a lot of managers there, and they called a meeting of all of us, and he told all of us, he said, and my high school coach was Jerry Wadford, who played under Coach Drew on the 53 team, and he was all SEC guard, and Coach Lou Bostic, who was on Coach Whitworth's staff, had had Coach Wadford, and Coach Wadford is the one that got me down here on part scholarship through Coach Bostic. So when we gathered up in that meeting, Coach Bryant said, I'm going to let all the managers go except for one, the head manager. He said, as far as financial aid, he said, if you show me your work, then in the fall we'll come back and we'll reassess and give you aid, restore your aid, and help you every how we can. Well, we came back in the fall, and all those other guys had left except for Burt Jones, who was head manager, and myself. And so I was next in line to become head manager. And so Coach Bryant put me on just about full scholarship for that. And then Burt graduated in January, so I took over in January of 59 as head manager through the 61 season, national championship season. But that was how detailed he was in organizing and getting things restructured. I never will forget after the Auburn game in 57, well, one of the players walked up to Coach Whitworth and asked him if he could have his helmet. And he said, y'all take whatever you want. They just about drained all the equipment. Coach Bryant had to come in and buy a lot of new equipment and everything to restore the equipment deal there. And because all the players had taken it with them after that Auburn game. So there was a lot of changes. One of them, of course, he met with the team, told them that we were going to start an off-season program, which was very detailed and very structured. It was in the, it's called Moore Hall now. I don't know if it was called that when we were in school or not, but up on the third floor there was a gym, and all the players would go up there and go through. There was four stations. But what's so amazing, with the university being the size we were, there was only one set of barbells up there. And so we went through that spring with that one set, but then after that they bought a bunch of barbells and weights and all that kind of stuff to build the strength of the team up and that kind of thing. But those 4 months there before spring training was, I guess you could say it was like the Junction Bunch out at Texas A&M. I meant they were just, from the time they stepped in that gym, the time they left, it was just go, 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 go. And so he was getting them in shape and weeding out the chaff, you might say, to see who wanted to play and who was dedicated to the program, that kind of thing.
Yeah, Dr. White, I'm glad you pointed that out, because having, like I said, visited with a lot of Coach Bryant's assistant coaches, and there's so much. Of course, he was an experienced head coach by the time he got here, a year at Maryland, nine in Kentucky, four at A&M. He knew how, like you said, he knew how to run a program and how he wanted to do it. But there's so much talk about the Junction Boys. But you correct me if I'm wrong here. That's why I wanted to have you on. You lived it. But I think in those days, you're talking about with Coach Whitworth, I don't know that there were any scholarship limits. Or if they were a lot more liberal than they are today. And there were a ton of football players on those teams. And by the time y'all got ready to play your first game, which, interestingly enough, 1958 was in Mobile against LSU. Alabama played games around the state in those days.
That's right.
Weren't y'all down to like 40 players or something like that?
Here's where we were. When Coach Bryant got here, we were there was well over 100 players. But now, in the fall, when we started back up, there had been a lot of them already quit.
Okay.
Spring.
Now he ran a bunch of them off already.
That's right. And then we come to fall camp, and of course freshmen were not eligible to play. So we were down so few that the varsity had to practice against freshmen because we didn't have that many players. But when we went to our traveling team was 36 players.
Wow.
We go up to Tennessee, and these guys are playing both ways now, so they had to be in tip-top shape. We had against LSU down in Mobile. I mean, we had them 3-0 at halftime, And we just didn't have enough players to, you know, compete with them. They went on and won the national championship that year. But the players, we go up to Tennessee, and one of the players, we're in the red zone going in to score, and one of the guards got a penalty, which set us back. We didn't score. During the game, one of the running backs fumbled a couple of times. We lose the game 14-6, and you know how Coach Bryant felt about Tennessee.
Yeah.
He was in school. They were not playing Auburn. Tennessee was the big rival. So his heart was dead set on beating Tennessee, and he had a tough time with them at Kentucky.
Sure did.
Malin was up there. So anyway, we get back from Knoxville, and he lets those two players go, which takes us down to 34. One of them was redshirted, which was Jack Rutledge. So the rest of the season, we were playing both ways with 33 players. We went 5-4-1 and were offered some, I forgot what it was, some cheap bowl, some first-year bowl somewhere, and the players voted to turn it down, and so Coach Bryant was in agreement with them. And then the next year, of course, was 59 when we went up to the Liberty Bowl, and that was the first year of the Liberty Bowl when we played Penn State, and they run a Statue of Liberty play, which ended up winning the game for them, I think, 7-0. So it was he was trying to get more players in here because he realized from that 58 team, 33 players were not going to get it both ways. But I think that's kind of what it was out in A&M. He had to, you know, when they went to Junction, a lot of the players quit. But he brought in recruits, and they ended up, I think, winning the Southwest Conference there before he left. So, anyway, that was kind of the process that took place during that time.
All right. So you got to remain as a manager after most of them didn't. You got to see the building blocks go in place, and I know you left a couple of years to help with the Cowboys and then came back and worked for Coach Bryant. But I guess, what did you see? And I know Coach Bryant had told those players that, if you know, when they came in, that we'll win a national championship. And he had a plan, and in 1961, they did it. It was a pretty quick turnaround.
He told the freshman class coming in that when their 4 years were up, they would be national champions. He set a goal for them right then. And Coach Bryant, a lot of people don't realize this. Coach Bryant was a player's coach. I mean, he pushed his players, but he loved them and cared for them. He knew what their limits were. He was great at assessing what their limits were, what they could do and what they couldn't do. He believed in them sometimes when they didn't believe in themselves. And he knew exactly what to push them to, for them to accomplish all that they could become ability-wise. And so he was great at that. He was great at psychology of motivating players. I mean, golly, there's times that all of us felt like we could run through a wall, you know,
for him. And
that was the love that we had for him, and everybody wanted to put all that they had in it to help him be successful because they cared so much about him that may not have shown at that time, but after everyone finished their eligibility, I've never heard one single player say anything bad about him from the time I graduated on. But during the time they were here, he was pushing them, and they probably didn't want to put as much effort into it, but he would push them to give that effort, and now they're glad that they did.
Dr. Gary White with us. So when you came back after graduating and you know, working and scouting for the Cowboys, you came back to work for Coach Bryant, and that started a journey. Of course, you got a master's, a doctorate, and number of roles. I know you handled FCA. I know you know, one point in time, you worked in the dorm, academic advisor, all kinds of duties. What led you to come back, and what was it like once you had, you know, became a full-time employee of Coach Bryant? What was that experience like?
Well, I enjoyed the – I was with Cowboys just 1 year when Coach Brown offered that job to come back and run the dorm. It was not called Bryant Hall then. It was, we called it New Athletic Dorm.
Mm-hmm.
And the 62 season when I was back here working on my master's degree, as far as I know, I'm the only manager that he ever let coach on field. But I went to him and told him that I was wanting to become a coach and that would I be able to coach. And so he let me coach the freshman team. And while we were at the Orange Bowl, I met Gil Brandt with the Cowboys. And Gil talked with me at that point in time about coming to work for them. And he said he wanted to talk with Tex Schramm, who was general manager at the time. And he would get back in touch with me. Well, time marched on and on and on, and I didn't hear anything from him. And I was too, I'd had a job offer from my old high school in Gadsden, of Gadsden High School, and then Cherokee County High School. But I felt like maybe that I should go to the Cherokee County High because of my relationship with so many people there in Gadsden. And even though I love Gadsden, it was just, I felt like I'd have a tough time there. But anyway, I was two weeks from signing the contract, and Gil called and told me that they wanted to fly me out and let me meet with Tex Schramm. And so I go out there, and they offered me a job, and I took it. And meantime, I had met my wife, and we got married, so they said that she could go with me as we scouted all these colleges and everything. And so I like 6 hours finishing my master's degree, and the Cowboys gave me an extended vacation so I could finish those 6 hours. And while I was back here doing that, Coach Brown offered me the job to be dorm director. And then in 65, they named it Paul Bryant Hall. And so I stayed there 7 years and then moved into academics. And then when Ray got here, Ray Perkins, then he moved me into administration totally. And then eventually, and also taking over the, becoming NCAA rules and compliance guy. So that's how I ended up when I retired in 96 as associate athletic director in charge of NCAA rules and compliance. But I had about 10,000 other things to do other than that. That was just part of it.
Dr. White, you know how this works. We never have enough time, and I'm glad you got up because we'll have to continue this conversation at some point. But I want to ask you about that transition because Coach Perkins, I think, was misunderstood a little bit. I mean, he got a lot of criticism for doing what Coach Bryant had done, which was come in and you have to build the program in your own image and the way you want to do it. And people were so used to Coach Bryant for 25 years, they didn't like it that he was going to do some things differently. But he was a good football coach. And what was he like to work for?
I love working for Ray. He gave me I worked when they got here. Well, I worked more in tune with football than overall sports program. It made me the football operations guy. So I would work with him real close on all of those things. But one of the things that he got misunderstood over more than anything else was removing that tower. But he mentioned to me one day, he said, I'm going to take the tower down. He said, I'm not going to use it. So there's no need in it being up there. And it laid over on the back of the campus for 3 years before anybody ever noticed it was gone. But he took it down, not disrespecting Coach Bryant, but because he was going to be down on the field coaching them. And
that's right.
And that kind of thing. And a lot of people misunderstood him about that. He felt like he had to run the program his way, and he did a great job recruiting. The 84 season didn't go well, but maybe that could be because we hadn't necessarily recruited or didn't have the Well, let me back up a minute. We had, and I don't know how to explain this exactly, but back there we had, I think it was the 78 and 79 freshman classes came in. One year, the freshmen could not play, or they had to be redshirted, and then next year the freshmen, they changed that rule, so there was two freshman classes coming side by side, which made them, in 82, the largest senior class that we had. Well, when they graduated, then we still had a good team left of the 83 team, but then it hit us hard, the 84 team. So that was one of the reasons that we, you know, ended up having a losing season. But then again, in 85, it started picking back up again because they were doing a really good job recruiting and that kind of. Ray loved Coach Bryan. I mean, he talked about him all the time. And he was not trying to be disrespectful to him at all. He was trying to do things his way because he felt like that that's what he had to do, that he couldn't be like Coach Bryan, and none of us could. So he set out to do things his way, and he left the program in good shape.
He sure did, Dr. White. And had he not gotten that huge offer from Hugh Culverhouse and the Bucks, I think he would have won a national championship. Hey, we're all out of time. Thank you so much. We'll finish. We'll pick this back up soon. I'm going to get you back on because we just scratched the surface. But that was enjoyable and informative for me, and I'm sure it was for our listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate you having me on here.
All right, Dr. Gary White. I tell you what, Chase, let's go ahead. Chase, wake up. Let's go ahead, since I went over there, and let's double up these breaks and go ahead and close out the show so we can hit the Miller's Edge on time. Thank you for tuning in, everybody, and we are going to be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., and I will be on the air tonight on TV on WVOA 23 for your local news and with Rodney Orr for Tider Insider TV at 6:30 on WVOA 23. The Miller's Edge is next. For Chase Brumfield, I'm Gary Harris. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Fowler.
Coming up on the Tuesday edition of The Game, we're going to talk to Mike Dettelier, WWL, the Big 870. We'll do a Southern Ohio score prediction day. We'll talk to Dalton Wasserman from ProFootballFocus.com, and we're going to also talk with one of the newest commitments to the University of Alabama, Trent Seaborn, committed from Thompson High School. He'll join us right here on The Game on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest-running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.